Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to American Conservative Radio. My name is Tracy. I'm your host this evening, and
I'm Bill Hinman, your co-host. And by the way, Tracy, that was wonderful Hopi Changey music there.
You like Hopi Changey music? I want everyone to know that we were using it first before Reese's started using it again. I noticed it on their commercials. They're starting to use it. It's kind of funny, but it's interesting. It's Holst, the Planets, good music. Buy it if you got a chance, if you don't already own it. Hopi Changey.
Yes.
Let's talk about this for a second, this idea of Hopi Changey.
You know, and while we talk about it, everybody has to visualize this, because this is radio. We're not like, you know, television, so we can show you this stuff. But there's a little trademark symbol every time we use that, okay?
But you know, there's a rule with trademarks, you know. You have to use it or you lose it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You know, you can't just let it sit out there forever and never use it. And, of course, Obama's not using it right now. So, you know, I don't know how long that trademark thing lasts. But, you know, I'd say the clock is ticking from the fact that he hasn't been using it.
By golly, you mean we may be able to reclaim a couple of good English language words back into the general lexicon here?
Well, I just got to say that, you know, well, you know what? Here's the deal. I think maybe Obama has brought some significant change to his administration here now in 2009 because, you know, I think I read today that George Bush had 7 evil, horrible, terrible lobbyists in his administration.
Yeah, and I heard that. Yeah.
And Barack Obama said that there was going to be no lobbyists in his administration.
Zero.
But hope and change, Barack Obama has brought hope and change, and last count, I think there was 17 lobbyists in his administration.
Yes, indeed. You know, for a guy who ran on that there weren't going to be any lobbyists, and a guy who on his very first day, January the 20th, promulgated a policy that said, folks, there aren't going to be any doggone old lobbyists in here, those evil corporate lobbyists. And within what, 11, 12, 13 days, something like that, he's got 17 of them in there, and 17 exemptions to his own policy. Boy, that's change.
Well, somebody would make the argument, you know, that his administration is like 200 people.
Hmm.
So 17 is not a big number.
Well, but how many has he appointed so far?
Well, you know, there's like a whole bunch of them have been there because, you know, he announces his cabinet positions, but there's a whole lot of non-cabinet positions that don't get announced.
That's true. You know, in fact, Hillary noted that on the campaign trail.
So, you know, there's lots of people. Remember the swearing-in ceremony the day after the swearing-in?
Oh, yeah, right. Now, wait a minute. Which one? The retaking of it or the one that slow Joe Biden screwed up?
Well, the one that Joe Biden did after the one that Obama took after the one Obama did.
Ah, right. Okay. Got it. Yep.
Okay.
I'm with you now.
It's the one where, like, they had all their senior staff in the White House stand up. It was like a whole room full, like, 40 people there.
Well, let's see. 17 out of 40, that's not quite 50%, is it?
No, it's not 50%. No. Hope and change. We've got to give him a chance. Maybe he might be able to make 50% if we just give him a little bit of chance.
Yeah, well, okay, he'd probably do better trying rolling craps.
I do have a question. How many of George Bush's initial nominees got bounced before they could get confirmed?
None that I recall.
You know what? No, because Linda Chavez got bounced.
Oh, that's right. She had a nanny problem.
Nanny problem.
Yep.
And I'm trying to think of, I'll wager money there was a couple.
Could have been.
Maybe two or three.
Could have been.
You know,
but
I just can't. Go ahead.
I just don't recall that they were major cabinet positions, though.
Well, you know, the one that really got me really interesting was the Labor Department position that hasn't been getting a lot of play from a lot of people. But the nominee for the Labor Department had to be withdrawn because she was on the board of some pro-labor special interest group.
Mm-hmm. Was that Solis? Or?
Was it? I don't remember who that was.
Me
Maybe
either.
I should have done a little bit more of show prep here today. Unfortunately, tonight we had CJ's ninth grade going into high school. Big deal orientation
where
the parents go and we talk about, you know, requirements and stuff like that.
Yeah.
The principal from the high school that was there said he had never seen a turnout for ninth grade orientation as well as this school, this class.
Oh, that's great.
Of course, this is only his first year, so there's no. I'm like.
Oh. He has nothing to compare it to, right? Okay.
Yeah, no, he's been doing it for like 6 years. But I think I said this before, I'm not surprised. This class has always been pretty active as far as parents are concerned since the very beginning. I mean, many of these kids, many of us know each other fairly well because we've been going to PTAs and events and functions and stuff like that for
sure.
The last 8 years. So.
Sure.
There's a lot of activity, but the school is in a very progressive, green, democratic-oriented area. So it's an uphill battle for us on a regular basis, and high school is not that far away from there. In any case, the point that I wanted to make about this was they were talking about how we were going to fill out the course selection cards for the kids for their first year. And they're explaining that what had to be filled out and what didn't have to be filled out. Of course, they didn't actually give us any of those course cards, and they didn't give us any course descriptions. They just had pictures on a wall.
Oh, boy.
Said, see, when you get the cards and when you get your course descriptions, then you can sit down and this is how you're supposed to fill it out. I'm sitting there kind of looking at them going, hey, you know, I understand you work with teenagers, you know, day in and day out, but, you know, we're the parents and we're not stupid. Moron.
And they couldn't have printed out those pictures on 8.5 by 11 sheets of paper or anything and let people fill those out, right? Okay.
You know, and send them home with the kids. You know, it wasn't a very useful hour and a half for me to waste this evening. It's just.
Yeah.
Especially when nothing is going to really happen.
Exactly.
Congratulations. We're all here sitting going, yeah, why?
Yeah.
I don't want to be here. Why? Somebody that wants to come in, call in, say hi, say what's going on. What's going on? Caller, you're on.
What's up?
What's up?
What's
Who
up?
Is it?
Oh, this
what
is
your
Mr.
name?
Boy.
Where are you
this
calling
is
from?
Mr. This is Mystery Man. I'm calling from Alaska.
Mystery Man calling from Alaska. You're not calling from Wasilla, are you?
From where?
No, I guess not. Okay, Mystery Man, go ahead. Call me. Tell me what's up. What's going on? What do you want to talk about?
Oh, no, I was just wondering what's the topics.
Well, what's the topics?
What would you like it
to
be?
We're going to make fun of Obama being all hopey and changey and bringing in all kinds of really smart, intelligent people to run his administration for him. And
so
then we're gonna
you
make,
don't You don't think he could change it?
Oh, I think he's bringing in lots of change. I think for the very first time, Washington is going to try. It's going to be hard because Washington's really set in its ways. I think for the first time, Barack Obama, and he's probably going to be able to do it. I think he is the man. He will be the one that can do this. He will be able to change the whole way Washington works. And if it works out well, Chicago politics will be now the national way of doing things. Say, yeah, hope it changes.
Well, maybe. I don't know. I don't know, man. It seems like a lot. George Bush, you know.
I don't know. All I've got to do is bring a whole bunch of thugs in, bring a whole bunch of criminals in, bring a whole bunch of lobbyists in, and let's just say, I won. I'm doing it my way.
Yeah, but George Bush, you know, got us messed up. And, you know, these countries might not be having it.
What countries might not be having it?
You know, Iraq and, you know, those countries over there, you know. They need us in the war right now, you know. Without our troops over there, they'll just go wild.
Well, they've been going wild for 700 years. What's the big deal?
I mean, you know, they're going to have to retaliate. If we leave, they might retaliate, you know, drop a couple bombs on us or something.
Yeah, I'm kind of thinking that most of the people in the Middle East are actually pretty much dumb as a bunch of rocks.
Oh, no, you can't believe that. We still haven't found that one son of a gun who, you know, I forgot his name. He's in the mountains. You know, who the one that we're looking for.
Oh, Osama bin Laden, and you really think that he's still alive?
Well, you know, you never know nowadays, you know. They could have him in some type of hill around there, you know, in the forest or something. He's going to come out and just bomb us.
All right, here's the deal. My opinion is this, okay? One, you can never stop terrorists because there's millions of them and they only need one opportunity. So the global war on terror is always about getting rid of the system that supports them. And the system that supports them are the nations and the philosophies and the organizations that promote those philosophies in the countries that, for the most part, you know, fly underneath the radar. I mean, realistically speaking, in world trade, in world politics, what is Afghanistan? It's about the equivalent of Monaco. Monaco's a little bit richer than Afghanistan, but realistically speaking, neither one of them have much of an impact on what's going on in the world.
That's
unless
true.
Something stupid happens, like, you know, 12 guys, you know, get into a Jeep and run it into a building and it falls down on 900 people.
Yep.
You know, trying to stop that is really hard. The idea of changing the culture of a country, that has an impact on the global war on terror because it changes the foundation of the system that supports it. So I'm all for that particular situation. But to think that, you know, if all I have to do is think about how to ruin your day, and I don't really have to worry about anything else, I'm going to come up with some pretty novel ways to ruin your day, and I'm going to be pretty certain that about 99% of them aren't even going to be able to see the light of day.
Well, I say we just take a big ship. We send all the gays, the blacks, and all of them over to Afghanistan and just bomb the whole place, man. And then we can get rid of some of this nonsense we got going on in America here in our good old country. We could just bomb them all today, you know? Just bomb them all.
I think I'm going to take issue with that particular point of view.
Yeah, I think so.
Just a little bit. Let's see. Let me think about this. Let's take all the undesirables and send them over there and then blow up everything.
Yeah, just blow up them all because they're just starting all this chaos and all this riot. We just need to bomb them. get away from them.
I'm thinking that what we should do is not, you know, see, I wanted to say it, Bill. I wanted to say it.
I know
and
you
I
do.
I said I wasn't going to do it. Oh, wait a second. You probably didn't, very few people probably read this, but I actually made a post that said, I'm not going to be PC anymore.
Yep.
And Mystery Man, you're an idiot.
Yeah, he is.
I was just trying to, you know, help the cause over here. You know, start a little.
I don't know what cause you're helping.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I would suggest.
I don't know what cause you're. I don't know what cause you're trying to. I don't know what cause you're trying to help there.
Think about it for a second. If we just sent them all over there and just blew them off the face of the planet, we wouldn't even have to think about them because there'd be nothing to think about. They'd just be out of here.
Tracy,
hey,
I think you need to exercise your kill button here.
I'm going to take one more little stop at this.
Yeah, okay.
It's really important for me to be able to do this. Mr. Mystery Man, did you actually ever pay attention to the fact that this is the American Conservative Party radio?
Well, I was just expressing my feelings. You know, there's two sides to every story.
Well, apparently you don't understand that, you know, I've been kind of actively involved here in the American Conservative Party since pretty much like the beginning, about a year ago. Been pretty active in promoting conservative points of view, conservative principles, conservative philosophies, and it really takes people really to the side to know that, you know, I'm gay. And so that your suggestion that maybe I should be trucked on over to that other country so that we can all just bomb them kind of ticks me off a little
bit. Well, you know, well, maybe I'll rephrase that. Maybe not all of them. Maybe just a couple of them. How about that? A couple? Is that a couple of them?
No, I'm thinking that,
We don't play that game.
Yeah.
That's not our game.
Mr. Man, enjoy Alaska. I hope it's nice and cool over there.
Yep.
We've got another caller. Let him jump in here. Other caller, what's up and who are you? Oh, where are you?
Butch,
come on.
Virginia.
I'm going to find you. Give me a second. There you are. Okay. Who are you and where are you calling from?
This is Butch.
Hey, Butch. How are
you? Glad you got in here.
What's going on? I couldn't resist.
Well, you know, I like Mystery Man. He's giving us some cannon fodder that wants to go over to the other part of the world and, you know, just die.
I was trying to figure out where he was going, and then I'm like, oh, my God, he's not going there.
Yeah, well,
yeah, he's going there. It's okay. He can go there.
He
can go there. Don't bother me.
You know,
elevating the conversation, right? I mean, he was definitely moving things up.
You know, that's one of the great things about America. We are still a place where any fool can have an opinion.
That's true.
And, you know, I'm in a whole load of hurt. I'm kind of interested in this idea a whole lot because, you know, I have made the comment that starting in February I was not going to be PC anymore.
Right.
That I'm done being Miss Nice.
Okay.
I'm going back to my original tagline that's on my blog, Moderate Mainstream.
Right.
And it's, you know, politics, religion, and economics, and, you know, I'm not going to be nice about it. And so I'm kind of at that point where, you know, Mystery Man, I am so done with people like you. So done. I have no tolerance whatsoever for your intolerance, just because we're not the way you think we should be.
Yep.
Well,
so,
there you go.
Butch, hey, congratulations on your nomination.
Well, thanks.
Yes, that's great.
Yeah, well, you know, we'll see how it all turns out. You know, it's you know, just like anything else. So, has anybody noticed? Have we talked about, you know, Abomination yet? Because I missed the first 5 minutes.
No,
well,
we're
kind of having fun with the fact that Hopi Change is actually working really, really hard at introducing Chicago politics to Washington, D.C.
Has anybody been confused with the fact that the only out of five people who've had tax problems, the only one that gets through is the one that's going to run the IRS?
He has experience knowing what's wrong with it.
I mean, the performance officer and you know, Health and Human Services and whoever else that has tax problems have to step down. But the guy that's running the IRS, his tax problems, you know, that they're not important.
But see, he understands the problem. He has experience with the problem. He has the right mindset to change that.
Yeah, you mean
bureaucracy.
You mean like our attorney general saying that him letting Mark Rich being pardoned would, you know, would make him a better attorney general?
Exactly.
that is a good perspective, and I appreciate your tolerance.
Right.
kind of tolerance I would be hip to.
Yeah.
Well, you know, there's the old saying, and it's one that I actually like quite a bit. Wisdom comes from experience, and of course, experience comes from screwing up. So,
maybe
we just need a lot more screw ups in Washington, and then we'll have some wisdom going on there.
Maybe so. Maybe that'll fall off.
That's the hope and change
that Obama's
bringing.
I was always told that you were supposed to learn from your mistakes. So when the FALN pardons came through, I would have thought that the experience would have imparted some wisdom and the Mark Rich pardon would not have come through. Apparently, my parents and elders, as I was a young man, misinformed me.
That's right. Well, you know.
Well, wait a second. What was Mark Rich's problem? Wasn't it tax evasion?
Mm-hmm. Yes, among other things.
That wasn't all.
See, that's the whole thing, you know? Democrats, just, you know, it's just tax evasion. It's not a big deal.
But the thing
is, it doesn't hurt anybody.
Yeah, but the thing is that tax evasion is a perfect example of an economic system gone haywire anyway. You know, I mean, the reason why we have tax evasion and people getting away with it is because we have a complicated tax code. You know, I'm kind of the Andrew Mellon philosophy that, you know, close all the loopholes, but lower the rate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if it was that simple, people wouldn't be able to dodge taxes because it would just be that simple. But
well, you know,
it's not that simple.
There used to be a discussion going on about either fair tax or flat tax.
Right.
That obviously his conversation has gone by the wayside because we don't have people that are interested in making the tax code transparent, simple, easy to follow, easy to understand.
You can't have corruption with a simple tax code.
That's true. It's much harder to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see if we, you know, I think the libertarians want no tax. The conservatives want less tax, and the liberals want more tax.
Mm-hmm.
Well, more taxes on rich people, Tracy.
You know, except for if you're rich and liberal. Then they want more tax, but they're just not going to pay it.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Yeah, well, that makes sense. That's fair. Because
that's fair. I mean, you know, I've got to suggest to you that when the new bankruptcy law went into place, one of the new requirements for people that file bankruptcy is they have to actually provide their tax returns to the bankruptcy court for anybody to look at. If you want to be involved in the bankruptcy system, you have to provide your taxes to anybody who wants to look at them. Now, there's some redaction going on. You can't see Social Security numbers, which I always thought is kind of stupid, because they don't want people to, you know, steal somebody's ID by knowing your Social Security number. And if anybody is stupid enough to actually want to steal the ID of somebody that's filing bankruptcy, you know.
Yeah, good luck with that one.
Smart move. You know, how do you know that you're in financial problem? Somebody stole your ID and your credit score went up?
Yeah.
You're in trouble.
That is a challenge.
In any case, I've had the opportunity over the last several years to see a lot of tax returns from a lot of different people from a lot of different places. And I would suggest to you, we all dodge. I don't know that I've seen too many tax returns that I didn't look at one or two lines and go, So,
well, and there used to be a fine line between tax avoidance and tax evasion, but that line was blurred to the point where, you know, you can't even legally avoid taxes anymore. You're accused of being, you know, an elitist, you know.
Here's what I think.
Well, when you have Warren Buffett, you know, walking down and looking at his secretary's pay stubs and saying, well, she pays a higher percentage than I do, and I'm just following the rules that Congress lays out, you know, therefore it's just a flawed system. I'm like, you're following the rules because you have a mountain of tax attorneys and accountants to help you properly evade or avoid taxes. And
well,
it's legal.
I want to draw a line here, okay?
Yeah.
If the average person drops $20 into the plate at church every week, and at the end of the year they're doing their taxes and they go, let me see, 52 weeks, $20, that's $1,040 that I put into charity.
Mm-hmm.
Forgetting for a second that they took 2 weeks off in August to go on vacation. Now, theoretically, that person has modified their tax return in such a way as to avoid paying a little bit of a tax.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that that's a problem. In the big scheme of things, I don't think it's even something to be worried about. But when somebody gets $83,000 worth of consulting fees and forgets to put that on the line,
I just forgot. You know, it's an error. It's an innocent error, Tracy.
Although we did get one apocryphal moment out of that. And that apocryphal moment was the Anointed One has said he's sorry. He screwed up.
Well, he
told that to NBC.
That forever. I remember I read an article last year where somebody was like, my gosh, you know, I hope he doesn't regret anymore once he gets in the office. Because every 30 minutes he was saying, I regret this, I regret that, I regret this.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Jesus, you know, after 4 years, how much are you going to be regretting and where are we going to be as a result?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know,
somebody made a point in reviewing, and I sort of remember and thought it was very, very good. Please forgive me, I was young and stupid. Jimmy Carter, with the idea of wearing his little sweaters in the Oval Office and, you know, kind of getting rid of the trappings of the head of state stuff. Now, Obama seems to be doing the same thing. The comment that was made was, after a certain amount of time of getting rid of the traps of states, you stop thinking, because the president has done an effort to try and get that way, of thinking respectfully of the office. And that's kind of, you know, the idea. Who was it? The idea that, you know, whenever you're in the Oval Office, you're going to have your suit coat on.
Oh, it's the Bushes.
Mm, right.
Dad and son both had that rule. And Bush Sr. said he only broke it maybe twice, you know, that he could recall. And Bush Jr. was a little more vague. It's like, well, I usually had my suit tie on.
Well, and we know that Bill Clinton occasionally didn't have his pants on in the Oval Office. So
it was all bets were off with the Clintons. Yeah.
Well, coats, pants. I mean, there's a moral equivalency there.
Yeah.
I'm just the idea that Obama turns up the thermostat because he wants to be warm, and then we all have to keep our thermostat lower. You know, I had somebody that wanted to file bankruptcy, and they were telling me how they had done all these things to cut their expenses before considering filing bankruptcy. They've done everything they could to get themselves straightened out beforehand, and this is their last choice. And one of the things that they said was that they had reduced the thermostat down to 66 degrees.
Oh, my gosh.
And I'm thinking, God, 66 degrees. And then I noticed that they, in fact, had two kids under the age of 5. And I'm sitting there, like, going, okay, let me tell you a little story. You got two kids under the age of 5 and you set the thermostat at 66. You're going to spend a lot more money on doctor bills and medicine for those kids over the course of winter than you will save by turning the thermostat down.
Mm-hmm.
Victoria has diabetes and has inherent medical problems associated with her immune system because of that long-term debilitating disease. And one of the things that we learned many years ago was keeping the house warmer during the winter kept her healthier.
Uh-huh.
It worked with CJ, too. The warmer we kept the house in the winter, the less colds she brought home from school.
Hmm. You know,
and when we made that change, the result was we went from 3 or 4 doctor visits just for colds and sickness in the winter for each of them to none.
Hmm. Global warming, where are you when we need you?
Now, I don't recommend anybody keep the house as warm as we do. It's at 77.
Oh, my Lord God Almighty. Really?
Which is pretty darn warm.
I've heard it's the opposite, though. I remember my pediatrician when I was a kid always told my mom to keep it at 68 or 69, and that was the healthiest because the warmer it is, supposedly, it lets the bacteria sort of fester. That's the theory, anyway. Theory and practice are not always.
Well, let me suggest
a lot of factors involved.
Let me suggest to you at this particular point in time that the theory in this house is the warmer it is, the healthier everyone is. We have another caller that has called in. Maybe we'll get somebody different than the mystery man.
Hey,
caller, you're on the air. Who are you, and where are you calling from?
Hi.
Yes. Hello.
Oh, this is Pamela Ann.
Hello. How are you?
I'm fine,
hey.
Thank you. I've become quite a fan of your show.
I have to give a big shout out to Pamela Ann. Pamela Ann is a longtime member of Conservative Talk.
Hi, Bill.
Hi, Pammy.
How are you?
I'm well, thank you. So, what's your comment tonight?
Well, you know, actually, I wanted to know what you guys thought. I had just caught on the Fox News blog that Rhode Island has run out of money for their snow fund. So my question for you would be, how can a state run out of money for a fund? Isn't that, like, stupid? You know, I mean, don't they plan for this? How can California be broke? How can Rhode Island, where is this money going? And why didn't they plan for these events beforehand? I just wanted your opinion on that.
I'm going to start off, and then I'll let Bill and Butch jump in if they want to do so. You know,
great.
Land, here in Wisconsin, we average about 50 inches of snow a winter. Last winter, we had 111 inches of snow, and they were scrambling for repaired vehicles on the snow plows, salt, because we simply, 100 inches of snow was just not something that happened very often. As a matter of fact,
I understand. I used to live in Cleveland, Ohio, and now I'm in Kentucky, so my situation is kind of precarious at the moment. I do understand. But, you know, it just, the funding process of the state for any funds, not just winter weather or, you know, snow plow salt, that kind of thing. Just, you know, it is a concept that I cannot grasp. And I just wondered what you guys thought about their ill preparations for such events.
Here's the other thing. Pam, I'm going to ask you kind of a personal question. You can ignore me if you want to. That's all right.
Oh, no, I wouldn't. That's fine. Go ahead.
How old are you?
47.
Okay, then you are probably old enough to remember the early 80s and how
I do.
The economies, you know, around the country was in pretty bad shape. And that was saying a lot given what we'd gone through in the 70s.
Yes.
Most people walking around today have no clue about what a recession is like.
I know.
Certainly the people that are in charge have no clue of what a recession is like. 91 wasn't a recession. 2001 wasn't a recession. 81, 82, that was a pretty good recession. 73, 74 wasn't really a recession in certain regards, but in a lot of other regards it was. The point is that we have a whole generation of people who don't understand recession, really serious recession.
True.
And because of that, they don't understand. Their idea of cutbacks is the same as most Democrats. You cut that budget by 4%. No. It was 13, now it's 9. It's still growing by 9%. No, but you cut 4%. No. In a recession, there is no 9% growth. It's actually negative, and people just don't understand that.
Exactly.
Governments no longer understand the idea that at certain points in time in our economic system, people actually stop making money.
Yeah,
it actually goes the other way.
What a bull
is that?
People
lose money. Now, we pretend, and you know, that a few people here, a few people there, a million here, a million there, you know, it's not a big deal because the majority of people are fine. I heard it last night with Dave Ramsey. You know, at 12% unemployment, 88% of people are still working. And I'm sitting there like going, yeah, tell that to the 12%.
Right.
The problem
with
government now is they have spent the last 25 years with growing revenues. Even in bad times, revenues grew. The idea that revenues could actually shrink, not slow down, but actually reverse.
Yes.
Be less. They just don't plan that way. It's just not made that way. And the federal government doesn't have to, because if they ever start running short, they just print more.
You know, there just got to be a way to fix that, though. You know, I mean, I had heard Bill's comment about how it, generally most of us had been raised, and that kind of triggered my little Pammy brain into going, you know, where are all the people who had been raised like us, the conservatives, you know, that have either, in your case, grown into becoming a conservative, or probably in my case where I was just born one, you know, and I'm thinking, hey, you know, why don't they plan? Why don't they plan decently? Why aren't we running things? Because, you know, we would be planning. And, you know, and then I hear of these, you know, massive shortcuts in funding, you know, either for snow or for schools or for, you know, some other, you know, road repairs or, you know, payroll for, you know, state employees or this kind of thing. And I'm going, you know, there's just so much money available without them printing more that you would have think someone would have sat back and thought, okay, you know, look at these numbers, all right? This is what we should need. This is what we may need. Why are not these numbers higher than the negative value that you just, you know, recited to me? And you would think that it would be nothing more than simple common sense.
Well, common sense and government don't really mix, but I will say this, that, you know, I own a business. And you know, I'm in a county in Northern Virginia that's getting hit pretty hard because the real estate value is very, very, very inflated.
True.
And so what's happening is just on the county level, forget the state, on the county level, our assessments are gone down anywhere between 25% and 40% in some areas, which means that the county has to figure out how to raise the tax rate to make up, you know, for the loss, because they want everybody to pay the same that they did last year. Otherwise, you know, panic in the streets. And most of it is based on the school budget. Okay, so on, on a local level, 70% of our budget here in Loudoun County is schools. And so would you like to hear some of the conversations that ensue when you have, when you say something like, we may have to cut school budgets? Well, then, you know, like I said, panic in the streets. But on the state level, there's and the local level, there's two major things that happen. Number one, rainy day funds are typically abused.
True.
So they put money aside, and what states typically use rainy day funds for is to keep from reducing the budget.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So in other words, we have a $100 million shortfall. Okay. Well, we have $200 million in the rainy day budget, in the rainy day fund. So we're going to use $100 million of that to keep from having a budget shortfall. In other words, to keep from reducing our budget, which is phenomenally crazy in a down economy. That's the first thing. It's people, you know, they don't know how to use rainy day funds. They don't know how to decrease budgets. But more importantly, and this is, of course, attached, is when you're a business, okay, and there is an economic downturn, what are your choices?
Well, yeah, you have two. You can either reduce revenues or reduce expenses, or you can try and increase revenues.
Bill, thank you so much.
You're welcome, sir.
There are two levers to pull.
Yeah.
More revenues, less expenses, okay?
Yep.
If you are a business and you have competitors, then you can't raise prices to increase revenues, right? Because if your competitor doesn't, you're going to lose customers, which means you'll lose money. So the only alternative to that, not the only alternative, you can diversify, you can, you know, find other products, you can get into another business, there's all kinds of things. But, and this isn't a downer on government as much as it is, it's just a definition of, you know, the reality. Governments cannot reduce. I mean, they don't have it in their makeup to, like, for instance, today, I was in a meeting with superintendent of the schools with the Chamber of Commerce, and nice guy. He's been our superintendent for 18 years, which has challenges itself, but a very brilliant man. But, you know, I mean, his position was the school system should not contribute to unemployment in the county.
Oh, boy.
Okay, let me run that by you again and make sure this sinks in.
Yeah.
The superintendent of the schools said they did not want to be a part of and contribute to unemployment in our county.
Mm.
Now, that sounds noble on the face, but if you look at the reality, what it means is they're artificially propping up jobs.
Yes, they are.
That should not be propped up, that need to be. Now, I mean, do I want, you know, I have a kid. I mean, do I want, you know, our school systems to be, you know, bludgeoned and beaten until, you know, they're no longer a school system anymore? No. But are there ways to efficiently, you know, spend less money? Are there ways to contract? And the answer is obviously yes. And not that he hasn't made an effort, not that nobody's not making an effort, but typically the effort is not really to contract. The effort is to survive without contracting too much.
Mm-hmm.
If you can run a household, you know, and do that on that kind of a, you know, like so local level, which is what I do. And, you know, then, of course, I have children who are in school, so I understand what you're saying. And, you know, I'm right across the border from you in Kentucky. You know, you said you were in Virginia. Mm-hmm. I mean, I understand the reality of the way things are done. I just have a serious problem with the way that they do it. And
well,
I'm thinking, gee, you know, if, okay, in my Pammy brain, if little old Pammy can run her household, efficiently and still remain
okay.
in the red,
right.
why can't...
Your kids are not going to protest, right?
Oh, believe me, they will. They're conservative children. They will certainly protest.
If you cut down your budget, your kids are not going to parade, you know, 2,500 taxpayers to a public hearing and tell you that you don't care about them because you're threatening to cut the budget. You're the decision maker, right? I heard somebody say one time, you know, capitalism at work and communism at home, you know? I mean,
yeah.
Literally, you know, you're the dictator and you call those shots.
It's Her Royal Majesty is the joke, but yeah.
What's that?
Her Royal Majesty.
That's right. So you can call
Isn't that right,
shot,
Bill?
And you have the flexibility, yep. and businesses have that flexibility. Governments do not. Governments don't have competitors, and they they're not forced to do things they should, and they are forced by constituents who, you know, anything that's cut is bad. For instance, there's a, this is off the tax situation and the budget situation. But there is a bill in Virginia to increase mandates for mental health for health insurance. Okay.
They've done that here too.
What's that?
They've done that in Kentucky already.
And it was in the crap sandwich, bailout bill or whatever they had at the federal level. Everybody's pushing for this. Okay. So, all right, now, it's a bad idea. I'm in the health insurance business. I know it's a bad idea. I know that premiums will go up, especially for small businesses who aren't even subject to the mandate. They're going to get robbed because the insurance companies will shift that premium and shift that cost. So, but the point is that I am not going to parade 25 autistic children on the bus and go to Richmond and protest it. And nothing against these families. I mean, I know that they want help for their kids. This is just the wrong solution. The people who are pushing, the people who are spending time, and the people who are being activists are the people on the wrong side of these issues.
The others,
right.
certainly busload up
and
those kids
and make a
parade.
That's a terrible example because these families have legitimate issues and they're looking for help in any way they can get it. And I can hardly blame them. I'm a big fan of people looking out for their own best interest from the government. On the other hand, in the long term, if those families have jobs, then, those jobs are going to be less and less likely to have benefits at all if they push for this legislation in the long term. So, but that's the nature of government, is that the people who are activists and the people who are bitching, griping, and complaining are the people on the wrong side of the economic scale from you and I. And since you and I are working hard trying to keep our budgets and we're not down in Richmond bitching, griping, and complaining, or Lexington bitching, griping, and complaining.
But we can't get to Lexington right now. That place is totally shut down from ICE.
Oh, boy.
It is. The National Guard has had to be sent out, and it's a devastating zone up there right now, 20 miles north of me, actually.
And FEMA hasn't shown up yet, have they?
No, you'd think so.
Hey,
hello, the governor declares a state of emergency, which it's an emergency. You know, I know people who are running generators out of their closets up there. And, it just skirted me by 15, 20 miles. I'm lucky I have phone service and cable and phone and, of course, my lovely computer. But, the point is he has made this declaration more than a week ago, and he's still now asking as of yesterday for them to speed up the actual financial aid that he requested for. Now, okay, it's not hard. You get somebody to, FedEx a stupid check to Frankfurt. It's not difficult. I could do it overnight myself. But the thing is, we're 700,000 people without basic essentials, food, power, electricity, heat, and now here more than 2 weeks into this ice storm, in which we're still getting more, by the way, people are still sitting there going, oh my God, what are we going to do? Because one, they live in an area which is, by its nature, sort of wild. It's not, Lexington is not a huge city, it's a college town. And, they're waiting and wondering, when someone's going to come and either rescue them or provide what it is that they need, like the utility company that, is trying to untangle the trees from the wires. So, I watch this every day and I check to make sure my power is on, thinking, thank goodness that I do have what I need. But, you know, for this to have gone on so long, when, you know, this declaration was made instantly, he was the first to do it under the conditions of this enormous ice storm, you would think that the funds would have been sent, transferred. They could do it with a button, okay? You know, it's not like they have to wait for the Pony Express to drive the check, you know, from D.C. to Frankfurt. You know,
the,
you press the button and the money's transferred.
The elephant in the room that we haven't talked about is the politics of that. I'm in California. California still does not have a budget.
Right.
The state of California is now, it has not been for some time, passing federal funds along to the counties, which they are supposed to have. They are now issuing registered warrants, which are basically IOUs, in hoping against hope, and maybe that's a change, I don't know, and I thought it
was a trademark.
That the banks are going to accept those. Now, the things that they're cutting out, the things that they are not changing, that they are not funding, are checks to senior citizens. They are not funding checks to foster parents. They are not funding a whole lot of things that are the social safety net. Exactly. And
well, that should have been set aside for
in California has had a 40% increase in its budget in the last 4 years.
So
poof, like where did it go?
And where it went was to pay off the constituency of Democrats.
Yeah.
That's
where
it went. And if that gets cut, then you start making your base mad and they don't support you. So it doesn't surprise me that we don't have a functioning state government here in California.
I would like to suggest the idea. I was having this conversation with CJ. She wanted to know why teachers were making them do career day type things, especially as eighth graders. And I tried to get her to the idea of situational bias. When you have always been facing one set of criteria, you assume that that criteria will always exist. When your tax revenues are always going up, you're never going to consider the idea that they're going to go down.
Right. Yeah.
Now, liberals have a tendency to be extremists in the following way in their thinking. Whatever the pattern is, that pattern will continue to the extreme. If the sun is coming, comes up, that means it's going to keep getting hotter and hotter and hotter and hotter until the sun starts going down, and then it's going to get dark, 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 dark.
Yeah.
That's the general idea of, you know, Al Gore. Well, if we're getting warmer, it means that it's going to be 10 degrees warmer, 15 degrees warmer. Yeah, please.
Yeah, I'm suffering from global warming right now. The temperature is 12 degrees.
Most of us are interested, most of us north of the Mason-Dixon line at this particular point are praying for global warming.
Really?
Please, more of it. Can we get
break out
faster?
The sun.
Hey, did anybody watch X-Files back in the day?
Oh,
back
yeah.
In the day.
I tried to skip it. It was just, like, weird for me.
Well,
but, yeah, I caught
thing,
a bit of it.
Yeah, I caught the movie the other day, and it was so funny because, you know, FEMA in X-Files was this nefarious back-end sort of the secret government. They always described it as the secret government. Little did they know, you know, 10 or 12 years later that, you know, FEMA would just be a check-writing organization. You know?
Oh, yeah. Art imitates life.
Isn't that hilarious?
Yes,
You know.
But this, Pam, that's the issue. It's a situational bias that if you are always faced with one set of circumstances, you never believe that the circumstances are going to change.
So they rely on this all the time for it to be there. And unfortunately, you know, the support that they had for it to be there has no longer been sustained, and they didn't plan for it. You would think that someone would have, you know, had a light click on and go, hey, you know, don't you think that we, like, ought to save our pennies for a rainy day? Because, you know, things happen, and, you know, look at the the population, you know, the growing. Look at the needs assessments. Look at the, unemployment. Look at the job losses. Look at the, tax revenue basis. You know, it just seems incredible to me that me and my teeny little house, running, you know, my little world the way that I do, you know, and not any fun, by the way, and, you know, quite conservatively, actually. You know, I'm not a spendthrift, and, you know, there's a little change in the bank when the month is over, but holy cow, you know, if I was running a state, I sure would be doing a better job than some of these other people. The county wouldn't be broke, or the state wouldn't be broke, or,
Pam,
you know.
Pam, hang on a second.
All right.
We've got one more caller that wants to jump in. Caller?
Excellent.
Who are you and where are you calling from?
Hi, this is Junebug.
Hey, Junebug. I'm
Here's
not
another
surprised.
CT regular.
Okay, listen up, everybody. We have 4 minutes.
Yes,
okay.
Ma'am.
Okay.
Junebug,
you know
what?
I just saw. I read an article today that who is he? The White House Speaker Robert Gibbs said.
Oh, gee.
That the bar, okay, upon the exit of Daschle, the bar has been set at its highest that any administration in the country has ever set. Now, I saw Barack Obama say the same exact thing tonight at a Katie Couric interview.
Hey,
now,
Jim, but that your standard
is
or is that what they told you?
No, it,
I mean,
was, it was on TV. It was,
oh, okay.
You know,
I just need to know.
Go ahead. No,
I'll
this article was actually in the Associated Press this morning that Robert Gibbs had said it, and then Barack Obama said it tonight in an interview with Katie Couric.
Okay, well, my general opinion is that Barack Obama couldn't set a bar higher than his knees if he tried to at this particular point. So I'm not expecting a whole lot out of our wonderful leader. I think hope and change actually should be applying to the fact that let's hope that time moves very quickly so that the 4 years get over, because if any more pain keeps going on, we're all going to be praying for floods to take out, you know, the East Coast.
Amen.
Please, global warming. However, all right. Pam, thank you for your phone call tonight. I appreciate that you're joining us in here.
Thank you. You only had a short time.
I appreciate the fact that you jumped in there. I like the idea that Obama thinks that he's setting the bar high, because let me tell you, he started it off pretty low to begin
with. Well, it's the corruption bar.
No.
Don't you get it? It's Chicago politics.
That's right.
Yep.
Yes, it is absolutely Chicago politics. It's something that I'm absolutely convinced that Barack Obama wants to do. He wants to bring Chicago politics, the politics that make a city work, and bring it right into Washington, D.C., so that he can make it work as well as it's working in Chicago right now.
Yep.
You know, the stimulus bill has $21 billion to be spent at the discretion of the new Secretary of the Health and Human Services, which is the position that Daschle's no longer, you know, in contention for. So,
well,
you know, maybe we should bring Tiffin and Resco to do that.
Junebug, thank you for your call tonight. Butch, thanks for joining us tonight.
Yeah, man, long time new here.
Yes, I want to congratulate you on your nomination. I want to suggest to everyone, nomination period is open for the American Conservative Party Executive Committee. Nominations will be open for about another week. And then we will have elections coming up near the end of the month.
Elections.
Bill, thank
Tracy.
You for joining us tonight.
Yep, my pleasure,
co-hosting our little fun here tonight. Any last words in your last 30 seconds?
Only a big shout out to my CT buddies, and thank you for joining us on the show tonight. Some good thoughts there. And I am always reminded of the old Limbo song of my youth, which is, how low can you go?
Well, I'm pretty certain that we have yet to see exactly how low this administration goes. Good night, everybody. See you next week.
Night.
We're out.
Okay. Good job, folks. That was a good
one.
Thanks, Phil. You betcha. Thank you, Tracy.
Talk to you later.
Yep. Bye.